reached, 1, has been changed. The new number is 2. Please make a note of it.
Please repeat.
The number you have reached has been changed. The new number has been disconnected.
Ring damage.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
Yes, you stumbled across brain damage on WUSB in Stony Brook at 5 minutes after 10 o'clock on Saturday, June 3rd, 1989, a day to live in history.
5, 4, 3, 2, 3, 3, 4, 4, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Did you say 9?
This is your program, Moscow Mailbag. Here's Joe Adamov to answer your questions. Mr. Greenberg of New York has sent all the questions for today's edition. How common are TVs and radios, video cassette recorders, and other appliances?
Well, I'd say the first two are very common. Every family has a television and radio set. We have actually 1.5 television sets per family in the country. That's what statistics tell us, and about 2.5 radio sets per family. That, of course, includes cable radios, which are very widespread. We have about 160 million cable radios. Then, unlike the United States, most of our regular radio sets have shortwave bands. As for video cassette recorders, there are few and far between. But I will say we are increasing their output. As for appliances, well, people have coffee grinders, toasters, electric fans. I have an electric masseur, vacuum cleaners, telephones, well, that's not an appliance, I don't suppose. Typewriters, what else? People have cameras, washing machines, slide projectors. One thing that is unknown here are dishwashers. Don't ask me why. We do have some microwave ovens. Our city homes all have hot water, either gas or electric kitchen stoves. You may have heard that for no end of reasons, quite a few appliances have disappeared from our stores. Why? It's beyond me.
Who introduced the 8-hour working day?
The Soviet Union first introduced the 8-hour working day as it was born in 1917. But everybody knows that the workers of America fought for an 8-hour working day as far back as 1886. You may remember the tragic events on Haymarket Square in Chicago 100 years or a little bit more ago, which gave rise to the celebration of May Day, which we here celebrate as the Day of Working Class Solidarity. And only in 1938 did the Fair Labor Standards Act introduce the 40-hour week and, of course, the 8-hour day in America.
What do you think of President Bush's speech at the A&M University, where he spoke on Soviet-American relations?
Mr. Bush's speech at the A&M University, where he spoke, well, got me kind of disappointed. I'll try to be brief. We waited quite some time for the administration to take its bearings, to make up its mind, we learned that the United States will continue talks on a 50% reduction of strategic arms from his speech. But then Mr. Baker already told us that. As for talks on nuclear testing, all our partners want, our partners in the States, is to perfect the methods of detection of already existing agreements on the power of the tests, on the thresholds. We did not hear a single word on the complete ban on testing. Mr. Bush still wants to go ahead with deploying so-called defense systems in space as soon as they're ready for deployment. To many scientists, both here and in your country, this means extending the arms race into space. A complete surprise in Mr. Bush's speech was that the chief executive wants to revive the 30-year-old, or 29-year-old, is it, open skies policy to monitor troop movements both in the United States and in the Soviet Union by your planes and ours. But anyone will tell you the satellites do the job much better and much quicker. And nothing about our proposals to drastically cut conventional arms and short-range nuclear missiles. Let me just say here that modernizing tactical nuclear weapons means boosting the arms race, not deflating it. Yes, we know we have many times more short-range nuclear missiles. We know we have more tanks. NATO has more fighter bombers and more helicopter gunships. But NATO fighter bombers can carry the same nuclear charges as our missiles. We also know how tenaciously some NATO members, like Mrs. Thatcher, want to hold on to their deterrent. So what do we propose? We propose that we both cut our weapons and armies until we both have the same number of tanks, the same number of guns, troop carriers, all within about 5 or 6 years. We, in that case, would have to destroy 40,000 tanks. Now, that's a lot of scrap metal. 46,000 artillery pieces and 42,000 armored troop carriers. NATO would have to cut very much less of the above-mentioned weapons, but it would have to cut its planes and helicopters by something like 2,500. And, as a result, in 5 to 6 years, we'd have an equal amount of all arms. Short-range nuclear weapons would be cut parallel with the cuts in conventional arms, not before. Unfortunately, Mr. Bush did not give us an answer to our proposals so far. We're still waiting.
How many people own cars in the Soviet Union?
About 15 million, which means every fourth or fifth family. Of course, this may not seem much according to your standards, but it is not our aim to give every family a car. We believe in developing mass transit, subways, in the larger cities, of course, buses, trolley buses, fast and silent streetcars, and, of course, cabs. Incidentally, the Moscow subway carries more passengers than any subway in the world.
What is the percentage of cars versus population?
If you want the exact figure, it's 46 cars per 1,000. You have about 12 times more. Many people do not use their cars in winter in this country, by the way, because of the rigorous climate. I do. I drive mine up to -4 degrees Fahrenheit. Mind you, I keep it right out in the open by the entrance to my home. The garage is about 15 minutes walk from the house, and I'm too lazy to walk there.
Do your physicians specialize in the treatment of cancers?
The headquarters of the fight against cancer is the Oncological Center in Moscow, whose 6,000-strong staff forms only a part of the vast nationwide cancer service. Most medical colleges have cancer departments and courses. Cancer treatment at 250 specialized clinics with the latest techniques is proving quite effective. And like any war, the war on cancer is a story of losses, sensational victories, and unfortunately crushing defeats.
What birds do you have as pets?
Oh, before I answer that question, let me just say that in mid-May, right under my window, nightingales began their beautiful songs. And I noticed quite a few people just sit on their balconies and listen. Now, what kind of pets do we have as birds? Finches, canaries, budgies or lovebirds, parrots, starlings, thrushes. Some have even been taught to reproduce human words. We have a very popular bird market with a long history. Here, birds are bought and sold, and not only birds, but other pets, too.
What is the ruble worth in American dollars?
A ruble is worth about $1.70, according to the official rate of exchange. But you know, our press has been full of articles lately to the effect that the actual worth of the ruble is much less. This takes in the overall exchange rate of the ruble. But if you come here and exchange dollars for rubles according to the official rate, I dare say you'll find many things much cheaper here.
Where is Romanov vodka made?
I think they call it Romanov vodka, but never mind. It's made in the United States. You have Stolichnaya, that's Soviet-made vodka, and Moskovskaya, another Soviet-made vodka, and Posolskaya. All these last three are made in the Soviet Union. Incidentally, did you know that Russians drink their vodka straight? Not even on the rocks. It may be strange, but it's a fact.
I heard Joe telling us about Armenia in a recent program. How about giving us some facts about Georgia, which was so much in the news lately?
To a man in Moscow or other parts of Russia, Georgia is the subtropical strip along the Black Sea with palm trees, magnolias, cypress trees, tangerines ripening, and blossoming shrubs filling the air with a delicate aroma. The fall, I think, is the best vacation season down there, and at that time in Moscow, the trees have already shed their leaves. A few words about the Georgians. They're, I'd say, a merry and open-hearted lot of people. Their toasts, and they're always toasts when a few people get round a table, may sound too long-winded and flowery to us, but that is the custom, and every toast is drunk with table wine. At a wedding party in a Georgian village, there may be up to 300 guests. And to make things easier for the hosts, they bring expensive presents and even money. Georgians love spicy food. Just try their adjika sauce and you burn your mouth and gasp for air. It's a devilish mixture of garlic, hot pepper, salt, and other ingredients. They eat lavash bread. It's unleavened flat bread baked on the walls of red-hot clay vessels. They prefer brine cheese, a bit too salty for me. Cheese is served usually with parsley and other herbs. Now their dances. I think they're fantastic. Men in Georgia danced on their toes way before ballet was ever invented. They dance it in soft boots, and they dance these dances even before the Christian era. It's a thrill to watch them, believe me. Most of their land is mountainous. And if you go around the Soviet Union, you'll see that every third electric locomotive is made in Georgia. They make steel, they extract oil, they mine coal and manganese ore. Tbilisi, their capital, produces aircraft, machine tools, computers. They also produce tea picking machines, brandy, excellent wine, and Tbilisi packages tea. Many old sections of the city, and it's very well known for this, have been beautifully restored with catchy signboards over taverns and carved wooden balconies that run the length of the house. They have a subway in Tbilisi, and, guess what, a cableway that takes you to a mountain park and a restaurant at the top. A beautiful view. It reminds me of Mont-Royal in Montreal. The Georgians are renowned, they're really famous in the Soviet Union for their polyphonic singing. And during the Tbilisoba holiday, which celebrates Tbilisi Day, you'll hear organ grinders, beautiful songs and fantastic dancing. And craftsmen will be surrounded by whole crowds of people, with the craftsmen demonstrating the art of chasing metal, carving wood, and weaving carpets. Oh, another thing. You must have heard of the Argonauts and Jason and the Golden Fleece. Their ship Argo reached the mouth of the river Phasis in Colchis, or is it Colchis? Today the river is known in Rioni. Now, the Greek Hippocrates reported cases of Colchis, or is it Colchis, malaria. Now, I was born only a few dozen miles away and got malaria when I was only 2 months old. Today the swamps have been drained. My last malaria attack was at the age of 16. So, stay healthy and smile.
That was Joe Adamov answering your questions on Moscow Mailbag. Address your letters to Radio Moscow, Moscow, the USSR. You couldn't do better than write us that letter. Your comments on the show are welcome. Mailbag is on the air every Saturday, Sunday, and Wednesday on the East Coast at 2410 and 0210 UTC, and on the West Coast at 0510 and 0710 UTC. In the 19, 25, 31, and 41 meter bands.
Determined there'll be new sheep, and the ewe sheep aren't even school.
Well, in case you fell asleep or something, yes, it's now June. We're up to the month of Merry June here on Long Island and elsewhere. June 3rd, 1989. And, of course, was from Carousel. June busting out all over. And that followed Moscow Mailbag. There's something special about the month of June. It's technically still spring, but I think June is more of a spring-like month than April or May, because obviously the weather is more consistent. You don't have one of those, you know, really cold days after a really warm day. All the days tend to be kind of warm, sometimes uncomfortable. But also you have the spirit in the air, because the routine is grinding to a halt one way or the other. School is ending. Summer vacation is beginning. And people are starting to go places and think about going places. But more importantly, there's that spirit in the air, kind of a spirit of individuality, a spirit of rebellion. And I remember a June 3rd, 10 years ago today, June 3rd, 1979. Does anybody else remember what happened on that day here on Long Island? Very historic day for me, anyway, and I think for a lot of people. It was probably the largest anti-nuclear demonstration in Long Island history. Probably the largest demonstration of any kind, except maybe a Klan demonstration back in the early 1900s or something. I don't know. But it was something that we were preparing for. By we, I mean myself and a few of my friends, and obviously a lot of other people, too, for a couple of months before June 3rd, 1979, we were meeting in someone's house discussing just what this demonstration was all about. And it was more than just a demonstration. It was an act of civil disobedience. I don't know if there are many people out there that have participated in civil disobedience, but that's when you do something that could put you in trouble, could actually have you thrown in jail, such as lying in front of a bulldozer, intentionally trespassing, or just placing yourself in a situation where you know you're not supposed to be, legally. Morally, though, is a completely different question. So our goal back then was to climb the fence at the Shoreham Nuclear Power Plant. 10 years ago. 10 years ago we were going through this garbage, and it's still not resolved. So we were planning on climbing the fence, and we knew that by climbing the fence, we would be trespassing. And by trespassing, we would be in violation of the law, and because we were in violation of the law, we would be arrested. Now, when you're involved in civil disobedience, you have to, when you're involved in civil disobedience, you don't fight. You don't throw stones at the cops. You don't yell and scream. Civil disobedience is kind of you break the law, and then you allow the consequences to occur, but you don't push things any further. At least that was our particular brand of civil disobedience. We were going to climb the fence and allow ourselves to be arrested, and through that action and the reaction that followed, we would be making our protest. That was how we were going to be heard. Now, not everyone that went to this demonstration back then participated in the same way. The vast majority of people simply came to a rally, heard speakers, and gathered, and that was their way of demonstrating, which is great. You know, everyone must demonstrate in whatever way they feel comfortable with. Now, this was the first time I had ever done anything like this, so naturally I was a bit concerned. You know, we were wondering what were the cops going to do? Were they going to be violent? We had little role-playing games. We had one person would be an aggressive cop, and the other person would be the leader of our group, and the cop would approach the leader of the group and be nasty, and we would have to figure out, well, how do we respond to this? You know, do we break up? Do we, go passive and fall limp and let them carry us away? What do we do? And we went through kind of a rigorous training period. We had at least 4 or 5 meetings that I can remember where we hammered out just about every possible situation that could occur. And then the day arrived, the day June 3rd, 1979. It was after Three Mile Island. And one small problem was that as we were all moving on our way to the shore of nuclear plant to participate in this protest, we noticed that it was pouring rain. I mean, really hard. It was coming down and it wasn't stopping. And that naturally had an effect on us because we were wondering, you know, well, how is this going to affect other people that are going to participate in this thing? Well, we were in a bus or a car or something. I don't know what exactly. I think it was a bus. I think we chartered a bus from Stony Brook. And going down Route 25A towards the William Floyd Parkway, noticed not very much traffic, but a whole lot of cops. Everywhere you could see, there were police. And that was a scary sight, seeing law enforcement everywhere and knowing what they were there for. And I don't mind saying that on that day, I was pretty scared. I mean, I was with friends. And I was in a positive environment, and I knew what I was there for, and I felt strongly about it. And there wasn't really a threat of violence, because we had no intention of being violent, and nobody on the other side had said they were going to be violent, but still, it's that age-old confrontation. Demonstrator versus authority. And it's scary when you're experiencing it firsthand. It's also very educational to experience it firsthand because you learn a lot. You learn a lot about people, your friends, your adversaries, and yourself. It's a great educational experience. Now, we all got off the bus, a car, whatever it was that we drove over there in some kind of a parking lot, a couple of miles away from the plant itself, from the entrance where we were going to climb the fence. We started walking along this this country road in the pouring rain with our banners, a couple of dozen of us, several dozen of us, in fact. And I remember walking along that road with the occasional car passing by, feeling like it really didn't make much of a difference what we were doing. We were just a small group of people walking in the rain, heading towards a fate that was kind of unknown. But as we got closer, we started merging with more and more people that were coming from other stops where they had let off their people, and we started seeing endless streams of buses going by, carrying people from as far away as the city. And I didn't even see the rally that was taking place down on the beach. Never got to see that, but that's where most of the people were. And, of course, later it was reported in the media that many thousands of people had shown up. And as we approached the actual fence, the actual entrance to Shoreham, we saw several people climbing the fence, and it was only a matter of time before myself and the group of people I was with had joined them and then done the same thing and gotten arrested, put on a bus, taken away, and eventually processed in Yafank and all that kind of thing, and let out on... I don't think there was any bail. No, there wasn't. More than 600 of us were arrested that day. And because of the way it was handled by both the people organizing the rally, by the authorities, and by the general public, the entire event was extremely pleasant. All the way down to the hearing where we all had to enter some kind of a plea. This was months in the future, and just about everybody was let off without any kind of a fine whatsoever. It was a successful demonstration. We set out to say what we wanted to say. We did it successfully. We had a good turnout. And not since that day have I really seen anything comparable on Long Island, although certainly the issue has remained on the front pages ever since. Now, today, June 3rd, 1989, you can sort of see a parallel situation many, many miles away in China, where the same kind of spirit, the same kind of rebelliousness, where students have been occupying a part of Beijing for a number of weeks now. Well, today it all ended violently. And we're going to be listening to a couple of things from the BBC that we obtained tonight. We'll also be taking your phone calls so that we can see what Americans have to think about what's going on over there. First, let's look at the news as we have it through our Associated Press, and then we'll go towards the other sources and opinions and things like that. This, just in only a matter of moments ago, a hospital doctor in Beijing estimates that at least 500 people have died. That's up dramatically from the figures they've been saying only a couple of hours ago. 500 people have died in clashes that erupted as troops stormed Tiananmen Square, the scene of a three-week-old pro-democracy sit-in. The doctor, speaking on condition of anonymity, bases his estimate on reports from 10 hospitals. The doctor denounced what he called the troops' vicious behavior and said, "My government has gone insane." State-run radio and television acknowledged some deaths without giving numbers. It said it was necessary to undertake that action to save lives and property. That's according to state-run radio. The soldiers shot and beat their way to Tiananmen Square, storming through the heart of Beijing. And the crackdown came 2 weeks after the government declared martial law in an effort to end the student occupation of the square that began May 13th, demonstration calling for a freer China with less corruption. The Chinese army detained CBS News correspondent Richard Roth and his cameraman. It's not clear whether they were arrested or simply taken into custody. Meanwhile, NBC is expressing concern over a cameraman and soundman who have failed to report in. President Bush deeply deplored the violence in Beijing. The president issued a statement from his vacation home in Maine in which he called on the Chinese government to deal with the demonstrators without resorting to violence. Many tearful students shouted, "We shall return," as they filed out of the square. Hours after troops and riot police surrounded the square, the students took a voice vote and decided to end their occupation. One fasting student said, "We're not afraid to die, but we've already lost too much blood." And more than 300 protesters chanted, screamed, and cried outside the Chinese consulate today, demanding that the Chinese government stop its attacks on students in Beijing. That's in New York City. With signs such as "People's Republic, what a joke," and "Violent government must die," the angry protesters grieved for the demonstrators killed by Chinese troops in Beijing. One protester, Lia Liang, said she couldn't believe the Chinese government would turn the people's army on the people. A shouting match erupted at one point among the demonstrators when a young man displayed a flag of the People's Republic of China on which he had drawn a Nazi swastika. He screamed, "That is what our government has become." But Paul Cheng did not like seeing the flag desecrated with the swastika, saying, "The flag is the people's flag too, not just the government's." And in Buffalo, a prominent Chinese reformer and journalist condemned the violence in Beijing at a rally today, just hours after troops. This is an early report, actually. This report came at 8 o'clock tonight. You can see the difference. Hours after troops killed at least 32 protesters in just over 2 hours. We've seen that number grow from 32 to 500, very ominous sign. Liu Binyan called the action by government troops against student demonstrators a massacre. Liu is former editor of China's official newspaper and a leader of the Chinese Writers' Society. He claims that because of such violence by the government, the Chinese people no longer recognize the communist regime. Liu predicts the violence will lead to the government's downfall. The 64-year-old Liu spoke today on the steps of the Albright Knox Art Gallery to about 100 people. According to Liu, China's leaders are afraid of offending officials in Washington. He urged the Bush administration to cut diplomatic exchanges with China in the wake of the violence. Soldiers today moved in on a student sit-in in Beijing. Witnesses say at least 32 died. Again, that number has been updated. And hundreds more were wounded as the troops shot and beat their way through the crowd. U.S. Representative Bill Paxon attended today's rally and said he has asked President Bush to recall the U.S. ambassador to China for consultations. Paxon says he also asked Bush to consider taking economic sanctions against China. Liu says the government may have the power to clear out Tiananmen Square, where the violence took place, but he says the regime will not have the power to rule China. Liu, who spoke through an interpreter, says the movement for democratic reforms in China has paralyzed the government. Liu's investigative reports into corruption in China's ruling circles led to his purge in 1977 after 34 years as a Communist Party member. And to update once again, a doctor in Beijing estimates at least 500 people were killed when soldiers stormed through the Chinese capital and crushed a student sit-in in Tiananmen Square. That number being updated only within the last few minutes, over 500. And there has been quite a lot of coverage of the situation coming out of China over the last couple of weeks. Nothing, however, is more sad than seeing it turn out this way. It seemed for a while like the people were actually conquering over the rigid militarism, sort of like it appeared in the Philippines when Marcos was thrown out. And of course, it still could be that way, depending on what the reaction to the events today are. We're going to go to the BBC now, listen to some of their reports. This was taped tonight, only about an hour or so ago, off the British Broadcasting Corporation. We'll hear part of their live coverage. We'll hear a news report from BBC. We're also thrown in there. We'll hear today's report by Radio Moscow on the situation, a very short report. And you'll hear how they reported the situation. Continuation of BBC coverage, including what the newspaper headlines in London are saying on what is now Sunday. And we'll get started with that now. We'll be taking your calls later at 632-6901.
Do you think it's Li Peng against the people, or is he likely to have a certain amount of support in the country?
I haven't found any popular support for Li Peng at all. It's partly a personal thing. He seems to have managed to make himself extremely unliked. That said, of course, there is some degree of support for his economic policy, particularly within the party, and to the extent that he represents a re-centralization and a greater influence for Communist Party cadres over economic matters, then he does have a constituency within the party itself. But that's minimal compared to what one's seen on the streets of Peking in opposing him.
Simon Long, I'm extremely grateful to you. No doubt we'll be coming back to you later on at some time. No time for the Sunday papers today, but I think you all understand why. Well, that's all we've got time for. From me, Jeffrey Stern, and from our Much Harris NewsHour team, goodbye and thanks for listening.
We have the latest bulletin of world news for you next. And then our book choice is by Michael Heseltine, former minister in Mrs. Thatcher's cabinet. It's called The Challenge of Europe. Can Britain win? This is London. Greenwich Mean Time.
BBC World Service. The news, read by Chris Chaplin. The Chinese army has stormed Tiananmen Square and taken control from the pro-democracy demonstrators. There's been much bloodshed. Troops fired on demonstrators in different parts of the city. Some protesters in the square were crushed by tanks. Elsewhere in Peking, the streets are said to have quietened down. Here now are the details. The Chinese army has seized control of Tiananmen Square in central Peking after mounting a bloody assault to drive out the pro-democracy demonstrators. There have been reports of casualties in many parts of the city, and hospitals have been filling up with the dead and wounded. No figures are available, but casualties are reported to have resulted not only from gunfire, but also from people being crushed by tanks. It was around 2 a.m. that troops, using armoured personnel carriers, crashed through barricades on the outskirts of the square. Eyewitnesses said thousands of troops later poured into the square from the entrance to the Forbidden City, firing as they advanced. They swept the north side of the square systematically to clear it of protesters. Tens of thousands of demonstrators crouched in the centre of the square. Petrol bombs were thrown, but some students continued to urge non-violence. Shortly before dawn, there were still students around the monument in the centre, although the north side had been cleared. But troops, backed by several tanks, were seen advancing towards them. The government loudspeaker repeatedly broadcast warnings that the martial law authorities could use any means at their disposal to force people to leave. Some of the worst violence was in other parts of the city, from which the sound of heavy explosions could still be heard towards dawn. Hospitals were unable to cope with the number of wounded. One small hospital alone had 300 casualties. In streets leading to Tiananmen Square, soldiers were seen firing at people from passing trucks, shooting indiscriminately. People shouted angrily at the troops to go back. Others ran in panic as volleys of shots rang out, some falling to the ground as they were hit. Hours later, the streets were still filled with people expressing their defiance and their outrage at what had taken place. Many said they could not believe that they'd been fired on, and they pleaded with foreign reporters to tell the world that troops of the People's Liberation Army were shooting Chinese citizens. The soldiers are said to be from the 27th Army, loyal to the hardline President Yang Shang-kun. President Bush, a former United States envoy to China, who has established a close relationship with Deng Xiaoping, said he deeply deplored the decision to use force against peaceful demonstrators and the consequent loss of life. The British government, too, has expressed grave concern at the events in Peking. The assault on Tiananmen Square came almost 2 weeks to the day after martial law was declared in Peking in an attempt to put an end to the most serious anti-government demonstrations in 40 years of communist rule. They began with the death of the former Communist Party leader, Mr. Hu Yaobang, when students held memorials at which they called for more democracy, an end to corruption in the Communist Party, and the resignations of China's senior leader, Mr. Deng Xiaoping, and the Prime Minister, Li Peng. The protests came to a... More than 10,000 students staged a sit-in in Tiananmen Square. 3,000 of them began a hunger strike. The protests grew as students were joined by workers, government officials, and even the police. The country's leadership was plunged into turmoil, and there were reports of a power struggle which saw the eclipse of the man the students had adopted as their hero, the party leader, Zhao Ziyang.
This is Radio Moscow coverage now.
News reports from Beijing say Chinese troop units have made their way to the central square of Tiananmen. Several thousand students are holding a sit-in there. The soldiers moved in to clear the square have been telling the students to leave it. There have been clashes between students and the troops.
Back to the BBC now.
They couldn't cope with the numbers of gunshot wounds. One small hospital alone reported 300 casualties. As dawn broke, several hours after the troops moved in, soldiers in tanks and armored troop carriers were firing potshots at youths throwing stones at them in the foreign embassy quarter. Diplomats reported that two members of an American television crew had been beaten up by soldiers and taken away at gunpoint. Crowds gathered on street corners later, shaking their heads in disbelief. One man cycling to work said he saw three bodies lying on the ground near the National Communist Party headquarters, where troops were continuing to fire volleys into the air to drive away the occasional lingering demonstrator. Students were asking the people of Peking to strike in protest at the military action. Much of the morning traffic consisted of military vehicles and ambulances. State radio quoted a commentary by the Liberation Army Daily saying the troops had moved in to protect the people of Peking. Since the Prime Minister Li Peng declared martial law 2 weeks ago, Chinese leaders have said repeatedly that the army would not be used against the people. It's likely to be some time before the political effects of the night's events become fully clear. But as the nation awakens to the horror of what has happened, some foreign diplomats are saying that they can only conclude, as the power struggle of the past week deepened, that army leaders simply lost patience and decided to stage what amounted to a coup.
Throughout the eventful hours in Peking, a BBC television correspondent, Kate Adey, was in Tiananmen Square witnessing the stand of the demonstrators and then the arrival of the People's Army. She reported the arrival of the soldiers around midnight local time and the disbelief by demonstrators that their own troops had opened fire. Talking to Michael Burke in London, Miss Adey described exactly what happened in her vicinity.
It was all around us. We, on several occasions, were flat on the ground as the bullets were coming over. The soldiers were firing indiscriminately. We were on three or four occasions in the side street leading to the main road past the square. And soldiers, as they were being driven past in trucks, were firing from the trucks down the street as they passed the end of the street. And then in the main street, some time ago, there was an enormous volley of shots in which we were fought, and three people died around me, one man in front of me. And there's gunfire now. I can still hear it going. About half a mile away, an enormous volley, which is going on just over the next street. And from the square as well, I can hear it now. More gunfire, again and again.
So they're still fighting, but do you think from what you have seen tonight that after all this violence, that the demonstration, the protest, would have been crushed?
Who can tell? I'm hearing gunfire now, just over the next building, and this is 5 hours after it started, and there are still people on the streets alone. They are not going home. They're standing around in groups. They're cycling up and down. They're clustered around, and there's still a large crowd opposite the line of troops who guard the entrance to the square. It is impossible to tell how people here will take this. They have been so surprised, so outraged by what has happened, that it is unprecedented.
The BBC television correspondent Kate Adey reporting from Tiananmen Square. You also heard Simon Long and Tim Noard. A Chinese journalist from a state-run news organization has also been speaking about the events of the past few hours. In an interview with another of our correspondents in Peking, James Miles, the journalist, who did not want to be named, was asked about his views on the clashes between the army and the demonstrators.
It's a terrible thing. It's the worst. I think from now on, the People's Liberation Army should no longer be called the People's Liberation Army.
Do you think the whole army is behind this, or is it maybe simply one unit of the army?
Whoever made that decision must be shot and tried by an international court.
What do you think will be the effect on the Chinese people? What results will this have in China?
It will mean nationwide rebellion. I don't think all the army soldiers, I mean the soldiers of the whole army, will agree with this. If there's a silence after this, it doesn't mean they will not make their voice heard forever.
How long do you think the government can continue this kind of action? Do you think...
It's the action of a man who is dying and making the last desperate kick.
A Chinese journalist speaking to James Miles.
China dominate most of the front pages, and the reports are based from the time when troops opened fire on protesters in Tiananmen Square. The Observer says the shootings will destroy any remaining support the government had among the people of Peking and lose the army its long-cherished reputation as the people's friend. The story is also the lead in the Sunday Times, which headlines its story, "Students Die in China Bloodbath." The other main story is the Soviet allegations that British special services have planted bugs in the walls of a Russian trade delegation building. The Sunday Express says Britain's relations with Moscow are now in a state of total confusion following what it called the most bizarre display of diplomatic pantomime in living memory. Another foreign story to make the front pages is the coming elections in Poland. The Sunday Times headlines its story from Warsaw, "Freedom's Spark Lights Up Poland."
Woman's eye will shed a tear to see his face so beaten in fear. So it was still at the stage of clubs and fists when that well-known face got beaten to bits. Your face was blue in the light of the screen as we watched the speech of an animal scream. The new party army came marching right over our heads. Those are the words to the song by The Clash, "English Civil War." Many words of which I think we can apply to the current situation. Nobody understands how it happened again. The sun is shining and the kids are shouting loud. But you gotta know it's shining through a crack in the cloud. As the shadows keep on falling, when Johnny comes marching home. And if you didn't find the single in an underground record shop in the village, you wouldn't have gotten the lyrics like I did. There are some people out there that can understand them without reading the lyrics, but they're few and far between. Our telephone number is 632-6901. We'd like to hear from you. What do you think is going to happen next? What does it mean? Have we ever seen anything like this before to compare it to? And just how much support do we feel for the students in Beijing? This year, 1989, will undoubtedly go into history as the year of the Beijing Spring. June 3rd, 1989, the day it all came to an end, at least for now. 632-6901. Let's see what feelings are out there. We have this update. This came in. A CBS News correspondent and cameraman have been detained by the Chinese army, and an NBC News crew had to dodge police and bullets during the bloody suppression of the protest in Beijing. It was not immediately clear whether any of the CBS journalists were formally arrested or if they were being detained to prevent coverage of Chinese troops that stormed Tiananmen Square, killing and wounding scores of people. An NBC cameraman and a sound man were unable to contact their network for more than 4 hours when they got caught in the chaos. A spokesman for the network says the two men literally had to go block by block, taking cover in houses along the way because police kept clearing the streets. They were shot at twice by police before they could get a couple of miles to the hotel. Now, of course, it's unclear, and this mistake has been made many times by the media, the difference between police and the army. Now, we've seen different levels of authority here. In fact, in the army, even, there are the soldiers that were successfully pushed back yesterday, and then there are the soldiers, the goons that came in today. Completely different species. I believe the ones that did the shooting today are from the 27th Regiment or something similar to that. A regiment that is loyal to hardliners. Something that we might have trouble understanding here in this country, but it's the way of the world in many other places. 632-6901. The phone lines are open. Please call in. Let us know that the events of today mean something to people in this country and people on Long Island and Connecticut. 632-6901. CBS News correspondent Richard Roth and cameraman Derek Williams were apparently taken away by the Chinese army shortly after 4 p.m. as they described the assault on the square. Roth's last words were, "We've got to get out of here. They're going after Derek. They're ripping away his camera. They're coming for us. We are trying to get away." Gunfire could be heard in the background and a shot of, "Oh no, oh no." Chinese military officials also confiscated videotapes from a cable news network producer, Donna Liu, as she walked through the square, but she was not detained. And that's the latest information that we have from Beijing. Again, our number is 632-6901. Let's hear from you. Area code 516-632-6901. Let's hear your thoughts and impressions. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Yeah. I was listening to your show, and how many people were protesting in the square?
Millions.
Millions?
Sure. At least, I don't know exactly how many. I can probably find out.
Well, you know, there's 600 or 800 million Chinese. I think even 2 million is a drop in the bucket.
Well, yeah, but it's a question of
majority. It's the majority rules if it's a democracy, so why would they listen to the minority?
Well, now, wait just 1 minute there. From what I've been reading in the newspapers, what I've been hearing in the media, the majority of Chinese people support what the students are doing. While you may have had a couple of million people in the square, you had many more millions that supported what they were doing. And in fact, they were the ones that came out of their houses in the middle of the night and physically stopped the army from moving in. So I don't think just because two million, I don't know how many people were actually there, but a large number like that is very significant, and it's indicative of how people feel, I think. So what do you think is going to happen next?
happen next? Well, if they get democracy, they can have VCRs and McDonald's like we have. But I don't see why they want them. They're just going to have litter and traffic.
Well, I think this is about a bit more than VCRs and McDonald's. I think it's about...
Isn't that what our democracy is about?
Well, it's a lot of stuff that we take for granted, being able to speak out and say what's on our minds. Obviously, judging from the response we're getting here, a lot of people are taking it for granted. Over in many parts of the world, just being able to speak out and say something, say what's on your mind, is a luxury. It's something that a lot of people don't see in their entire lifetime. Here, we have that opportunity all the time, and we waste it.
As I understood it in the beginning, they were complaining. They dropped this point pretty quickly, that their officials were all corrupt.
Uh-huh.
They probably have the same type of democracy we have.
Well, I think corrupt officials exist in any kind of a system.
But all of our officials are corrupt.
Well, that may be true. And it may be true that all of their officials are corrupt. But what they're pressing for is a democratic foundation where they don't get shot at by troops for having a peaceful demonstration. I mean, why were these people killed? Why were 500 people murdered in the streets of Beijing in the last 12, 24 hours? Why?
Because they wanted the same democracy that they have in Washington, D.C., where 1,900 people were killed last year.
I don't follow.
I'm just cynical about it. I don't think the Chinese are going to change anything. Those people are they're going to put them in jail, probably. Like, we put people in jail that complain over here. You just don't hear that much about it.
That's true. But I don't think I follow what it is you're saying.
Well, if it wasn't for the BBC, and I believe a lot of the stuff the BBC says because they're not affiliated with our news media, which is just a pack of liars. But I think it's going to be, it's just being hyped up. Last month it was the jogger in Central Park was on the front page. This month, this week, it's going to be the Chinese. Next week it'll be apartheid again.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that this is one of the most important stories of the entire century. When you have this number of people in the most populous nation in the world risking their lives for something so basic as democratic reforms, this is the most trouble that this regime, the Chinese regime, has been in since 1949 when it became a communist nation. And it's something the whole world is watching with a lot of interest. This is not, you know, some minor third world country, and I don't mean minor in a derogatory way. This is a very big thing that's going on right now. And I think a lot of us don't see that.
Well, if they don't carry it to total revolution, it's just going to be like when we had over 200,000 people march on Washington in 71. We made a big deal out of it. All those people now, they're sitting in front of their VCR. They're not listening to you.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? It's
yeah, I know what you're saying.
They're going to forget about it in a couple of years if they're like us and we're a true democracy.
Well,
don't remember anything. We have a short memory.
You see, materialism, I don't think, is all that compatible with democratic ideals.
Well, that's what happened to this country.
Yeah, people fall into materialism, no question about it. I don't think the people in China are pushing for materialism. You know, they're not. I mean, it would be nice to have more prosperity, but from what I've been reading, it's not that so much that they're after. It's the freedom that and the lack of corruption. Now, of course, it's kind of naive to say we want no more corruption, period, and expect it to stop. But you have to admire their spirit. You know, it's that springtime spirit, the young people coming out and saying, you know, we need a change, and everybody else kind of realizing, hey, it's time for a change. What is going to happen now that 500 people have been shot in the streets? I shudder to think. Is China going to go into a civil war now, and what would that mean if they did?
That would make a domino thing in other countries. Everything, it'll be an uproar. It'll probably have a lot to do with next year when we have our Great Depression start.
Is that scheduled for next year?
Just about.
Okay.
Watch your interest rate.
I certainly will. Thanks for calling, sir.
You're welcome.
632-6901. Call up. Say what's on your mind, please. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage. That's enough of that. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Yeah. I would like to say that, you know, that the gentleman that just called, you know, that is fine Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I wasn't hearing. That we cannot be pragmatic in the sense that if we believe that this country needs a revolution and other countries have had revolutions, you know, and those revolutions have decayed or in some way, you know, deform itself due to the people who have led them, you know, we have to understand that and make a logical understanding that there, if there is a problem with that system, then we must protest it without, regardless of, you know, the ideology that is behind it.
Uh-huh. Now, how does that apply to the situation in China?
Well, that, you know, a lot of people will just see this as, you know, some of the people who are not conform with the social system that China had had in the, you know, in the last 40 years.
Uh-huh.
And that, you know, this is just, like he said, just a few people. But, you know, a few people are part of the people, and so we must listen to their opinions. That's all I want to say.
Okay, now, obviously the Chinese government has, well, I don't know if we can say they haven't listened, because, yes, they've noticed the people there, and they've reacted. What do you think is going to happen now that they've reacted in a violent manner?
Well, the most likely thing that is going to happen is that definitely there's going to be more protests. I don't believe that it's going to be quieted down so easily.
Uh-huh.
That it will follow a sort of, you know, maybe not in the same magnitude, but it will follow protests. And who knows, maybe it does follow in greater magnitude, you know. But I know it will continue.
Uh-huh. Okay, that's something I'd like to ask the other people that are calling
okay.
in. Thanks for calling.
All right.
632-6901. The question is, what will happen as a result of the violence now? Will the demonstrations be quelled? And perhaps you can put all this into perspective by, hard as it may be, imagining yourself in that kind of a position. And it's easier to do that when you're able to turn on the TV set and see people live on satellite in Beijing acting like your friends, laughing, dancing, doing the various things that people do, and you realize what it is that they are seeking, what they're after, what they want. And now you hear about what has happened to them. You realize that some of those people that you saw on TV have been shot, and there is chaos now in that city, chaos in the entire country, perhaps. With all that in mind, how would you react? Would you want to go back and face the goon squad again? Would you just kind of forget you ever got involved and go back to your boring life and just do what you're told and not ask any more inconvenient questions? What would you do? And what do you think the people in China are going to do? 632-6901. Speak out. You're so lucky you have the chance. 516-632-6901. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Going up to the GOA.
I don't know what you're saying, but I didn't like the sound. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hey, Eric.
Yo.
It's Sammy.
How you doing?
Sammy. About those Chinese revolting?
Uh-huh.
I got a Korean neighbor, and he's revolting. And you know, the Chinese are probably complaining because I hear they eat dogs in China.
Yeah.
And that's revolting, man. I wouldn't eat no dog.
Well, that's not quite what we're talking about tonight.
But well, they want democracy.
Yeah.
But why don't they just kill everybody else, then? There's 600 million of them. They could make a land bridge and come over here for democracy. But, you know, they don't vote there. So how are they ever going to get democracy without dying? They got to die.
Hello, this is the phone mail system. You may now release the call or hang up.
I've transferred him to a place that he belongs. 632-6901. I'll take more calls when we get a full stack here. We've only got a couple on the line, and if they're as silly as the last couple, I don't want to take them, so let's have a whole bunch so I can at least have some backup. 632-6901, area code 516. And if we don't get calls, we can just play music, if that's what people want to hear. To look at a newspaper article that appeared in today's paper before any of the news started breaking, it's kind of a bitter irony. Okay, I see the people on the phone there. It's a good start. Stay on the phone. Now let's get a couple more people in, and we'll go right back to the phones. 632-6901. Residents of the Chinese capital rolled out of bed early this morning. Again, this is yesterday's news. Rolled out of bed early this morning and formed a human chain that turned back up to 10,000 infantry troops bent on retaking Tiananmen Square. About 100,000 people, many clad only in undershorts and pajamas, chanting, "We must protect our students," blocked the mostly unarmed troops one block from the city's central square at 2:30 a.m. local time, which was 1:30 p.m. yesterday our time. The troops gathered into a small column, about five soldiers wide, and started pushing through the thickets of civilians. At 2:45 a.m., some troops started to break off in groups of threes and fours, pushing out of the crowd and running east, the direction from which they had come. This is troops running away from the civilians. But for another 15 minutes, the bulk of troops inched forward, arms locked, ignoring a barrage of pushes, shoves, insults, and occasional punches to the head. Go back, we don't want you here," people screamed. Some soldiers were yanked from the formation by civilians, had their backpacks stripped away, and were shoved back into the line of troops. And finally, shortly before 3 a.m., the soldiers faltered before the press of the crowd confronting them, losing a step, then another, then 10 yards, and finally half a block. Then they forced their way onto the sidewalk and sat down. One of the few soldiers who would speak to a reporter said their orders had been to surround the square and wait for armed police who would cart off the approximately 10,000 students who have occupied the square since May 13th. "We are just soldiers. We love the people," he said, tears welling in his eyes. While it was too early to tell what effect the troops' failure would have on the political scene, Western diplomats on the scene said that it was an extraordinary setback for the hardliners in the Politburo of the Central Committee of the ruling Communist Party, one that could end the career of Premier Li Peng, architect of the failed martial law that has been in effect since May 20th. Perhaps that's the answer right there. The failure yesterday of the troops to gain ground led to this rather overly violent incursion by another division of soldiers. Diplomats said they believed that the dramatic scene was the strongest show of anti-government emotion by the people of Beijing since the communist takeover in 1949. Unlike incidents last month, when civilians turned back vehicles filled with troops who appeared intent on avoiding violence, these troops were clearly determined to get to the square. The response to the troops today apparently cut across age and class barriers. Students were joined by construction workers, pot-bellied old men, and tiny, delicate grandmothers dressed in dark silk pajamas, who very well may be among the people who were killed today. "The People's Army loves the people, and the people love the People's Army," shouted the crowd milling about the street, some standing on tops of buses and trucks they had used to set up roadblocks. "You are the People's Army, and the people have told you to stop. The people have made you stop. You must obey the will of the people," a young construction worker shouted at one group of woebegone-looking soldiers huddled in the darkness under a bunch of trees. The students occupying Tiananmen Square, the governmental and spiritual center of Beijing, have been demanding a host of democratic reforms. They refused to leave for the historic visit of Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev when their own leaders said the point had been made and it was time to retreat. When wind and rainstorms hit the square, and finally this morning when faced by the column of army troops, they stayed throughout. The charged atmosphere may grow hotter as word spreads of a traffic accident in which an out-of-control army jeep carrying two soldiers crashed into several bicycles, killing at least two people and injuring two seriously. This is the first casualty of the war against the stupid old men, a student said of the accident victims. People on a rooftop raised a banner that said, "Seriously punish the assassins." That was when two people were dead. Now there's over 500. Early this morning, two trucks full of troops were trapped by citizens on the western section of the city and, like their counterparts on foot, were subjected to barrages of political lectures from workers and students. "The old men tell lies. They try to turn you against your people. You must not listen to them," one middle-aged woman shouted. "You are my children. The students are your brothers. You cannot hurt them." Another 200 troops still were trapped at dawn just north of the square, squatting in a construction site, surrounded by chanting students. "I was told to come to the city for exercises. I didn't know the people didn't want me. I thought there was chaos," one retreating soldier said. And I can hardly wait to see the newspapers tomorrow. 632-6901, area code 516. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Don't have to be Jewish.
I don't like that voice, I'm sorry. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Yeah, hi, with this thing with Beijing and everything that's going on.
Uh-huh.
You know, the last time a major takeover like this was tried, let's not say takeover, try for democracy.
Uh-huh.
What happened in Vietnam? I mean, I'm for democracy. So are they. Look what happened there. What's going on in Korea right now?
Well, now, where were the massive outpourings of students marching for democracy in Vietnam? I didn't see that.
The majority was in the United States.
Oh, is that what you're referring to? Okay, yes. That was directed against a particular action and not for something as diffuse as just democracy, you know.
Well, no, not really. They didn't want communism. Just like the Chinese, they don't want communism. They're looking for a democracy.
Uh-huh.
And that's in Korea and in Vietnam. Both, you know, happened there, too.
See, I don't see anti-communism as much as I see pro-democracy. I mean, yes, obviously there's a lot of bad feeling against the current regime, but I don't see people saying communism is bad in this country. I don't see that in the Soviet Union either. I just see the need, people saying there's a very definite need for reforms and changes. So I think there's a significant difference there.
I don't know. Have you ever been to any of these Far Eastern countries, anything like that?
No.
China, Japan, any of that?
I have not.
Been in the back villages?
Over there?
Yeah.
No, I haven't been over there at all.
I don't think these people... I've been overseas and I've seen this stuff, and I don't think the people in the back villages and all, they could survive under a democratic government.
Why not?
I don't think they have the tools to get anywhere, to even begin.
You mean free enterprise?
Yeah.
Well, it's a learning process. You know, people will fail. I think...
that's why I think they're going to fail now.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's a shame. It really is, but that's the way it looks.
Look at the system now, the system they have. Has not that system failed them?
Yeah, that system has failed them. That's why they're having a revolt.
So how could any change be for the worse? You see what I'm saying?
Change, because right now there's going to be a lot of killing.
Well, yes, obviously the road to a change involves this kind of a conflict, but I'm saying if they achieve that kind of a change, if they do get their democratic reforms...
Then I'd say it's worth it. I definitely say it's worth it, but...
Well, what do you think is going to happen next?
Yeah, up to that point yet. I mean, they're like on the edge, almost there for this, the people all going for it. I don't think all the people going for it. They were throwing roses at the army the other day.
Uh-huh.
Now the army's shooting back at them where they weren't the other day.
Uh-huh.
Telling me the majority is now swinging in the wrong direction.
What do you mean the majority is swinging in the wrong direction?
That the ones who are not looking for the democracy, the ones that are run under this communist government, are swinging back and they're in fear that if they stand up and back these people, they're going to be either killed or thrown in jail.
Uh-huh. Well, I haven't seen what the reaction, I think it's too early to say what the reaction to the shooting.
I think it's just that fear of the communism, just that fear that's built into the people that there aren't enough backing it yet.
But you see, they've tasted the positive feeling of gathering with millions of people and saying, you know, we want this.
That's right, in the sense that is a freedom.
Now, to shoot down those people, I think, is probably the most stupid thing that Li Peng could have done. You know, because...
I think it's going to swing more of the democratic people, the people looking for this freedom. You're going to swing more into it because of this action.
All I can say is, all I know is my own feelings. And how would I react after having gone through something like that for the last few weeks, only to be met by the kind of response that they were met with today? I certainly wouldn't
I'd be a heck
say,
of a lot more fearful.
I'd be fearful, but I wouldn't say, that's enough, I'm not going to bring this up anymore. Maybe I'd be very cynical. I don't know. But I just couldn't see... I can't see everybody just suddenly giving up and going home and forgetting about it.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
Well, you got a situation where two-thirds of the world still eats with its hands.
Uh-huh.
Three-quarters of the world are sheep.
Uh-huh.
They'll never go from ox carts to computers.
Well, we'll have to see. We'll have to see what the different cultures manifest upon themselves. Thanks for calling, sir.
Hey, take care.
632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
You don't have to be Jewish to be a schmuck, but Andrew Goldberger is.
I'm sorry I hung up on you those three times. I should have just done something else to the call. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi. This is Christopher John.
Hi, Christopher John. How are you?
Remember I called your show a couple weeks ago?
Refresh my memory.
We talked about Bayshore.
We talked about Bayshore?
Yes, all the car dealerships.
Oh, okay. All right. Yes.
Yeah, I'm here listening with my friends again.
Okay, well, we're not talking about Bayshore tonight.
I know. What I wanted to say was about, the last person who called, I forgot his name. He was talking about how democracy couldn't work because the back villages wouldn't survive.
Uh-huh.
I don't think that's true. I think they would because basically they're not as affected by the communist society as the people who live in the big cities. You know, they're more set in their old ways, you know, traditional ways. They're less affected by the communist revolution, if that's what you want to call it.
Okay. In other words, their lot doesn't really change no matter what the situation is with government. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I really don't think it's gonna change them at all, you know. I'm really shocked. Are the protests totally broken up, or...
From what we heard from the BBC, there are still lots of people in the streets, but of course, the majority of it has been plowed right through by the army. It's a question of what lingers inside the people.
Mm-hmm.
The people have themselves been broken up, but has their spirit been crushed?
I don't think so.
I don't see how it could be. Not after all that time where they've been massing in the square and just learning what a positive feeling it is to gather and to want a change. Because they achieved a change. To see all these people doing this, that in itself was a change. And it was a good feeling to experience that change, I'm sure, and to just give that up. Because these hooligans come in and gun them down. I don't think that's going to wash.
I'm a little confused. I thought the soldiers were actually supporting the students.
Well, you see, that's the interesting thing. The soldiers up until today were pretty much being controlled by the people. They would move into a community or a particular group and be pushed right back by the people. And when you saw their faces, you realized these weren't soldiers; these were people too, right? And today, the soldiers that they sent in were—I don't know what you would compare them to in our country, but it was sending out the heavy artillery. These weren't the same people.
Either that, or maybe some incident between a townsperson and a soldier you know, maybe there was a fight over something, and that set it off.
No, it wasn't that, because there had been little skirmishes like that. This was a well-organized, professional team of killers. I don't know if you ever saw Full Metal Jacket. They train people in every army. They train a particular battalion to just be killers. And if you happen to see the documentary on Mili, which was on a couple of weeks ago on TV, that was the massacre that American soldiers took part in Vietnam. One of those soldiers said, once you start killing, it becomes really easy. Once you do it a couple of times, it almost becomes routine. There's a certain group of people that every army trains to be killers. That's who they sent in today, the killers.
Yeah, I see.
Turn that off.
I see. What was I going to say? The Mao's ideas were just, you know, they weren't working in today's society over there.
No. Well, there's a lot that needs to be updated.
Yeah, but they were turning family members against other family members, and re-education camps. I think that's really bad, and I'm glad. I was delighted to see that they were finally protesting against this.
Uh-huh. Well, I think, you know, any kind of protest is a healthy sign. Any kind. You know, whether it's tent city people on campus here or people in Beijing. It's even if you're completely wrong, just the act of protesting, I think, is a healthy thing. That's, you know, when I was involved in the Shoreham thing. You know, I still think I was right to do that, but just the feeling of going out there and speaking your mind, participating in a demonstration, it's a healthy feeling. It's something I think we should all do at some point.
I'm surprised that they even got away with it. You know, I didn't think they could get away with things like that.
Well, I think the reason they got away with it so long was because it was a surprise, and the government had no idea how to handle it. Also, the timing factor. You don't want to put down people violently when the Soviet premier is visiting, and you have all these foreign journalists running around, you know, with live satellite feeds. So it was a lot of... the hardliners didn't really have that firmer grip on things at that point. They seem to have strengthened their grip now. So, obviously the timing is a little better. Now, how will it pay off in the long run? That's the question we're asking here tonight.
I agree. That was the timing had to been. It's classic timing. You know? Mikhail Gorbachev's going, hey, why can't we go to Beijing, you know? Let's go to Beijing.
Yeah.
No, you can't go there, no. But
I think it would be a good time for Bush to visit Beijing now. Do you think the president said enough about it?
No, I think we should really take some sort of action. I think the UN should take some sort of action.
Like what?
Like, this is...
So,
I don't know. I don't know. Can't the UN say something about that? I think they can.
I sure hope they do.
I really hope they do.
And we shouldn't feel that because we're in another country, thousands of miles away, that we can't say something either. These are our fellow human beings. These are our fellow students, young people being gunned down mercilessly just because they're standing up saying we want democracy. Can you imagine that happening here? You know. We can't even think about it, and maybe that's the problem here, because we don't even think it's possible. The fact is, it's possible any place. You know, things change anywhere, and the peaceful atmosphere of Beijing only 2 days ago is now an atmosphere of complete fear and violence. Anyway, thanks for calling, sir.
Oh, wait, can I say one more thing?
Yeah, one more thing.
Andrew, don't call in with stuff like that. When you're talking about an important issue, you shouldn't be calling in and starting up with things like that. Say hello first, okay?
Well, that wasn't Andrew.
Are you sure that wasn't Andrew?
Well, he was talking about Andrew, so it wasn't Andrew. Yeah,
well, people shouldn't call in that way. I don't agree with that, you know, especially when this topic is serious.
I appreciate that. You know, you can add a little levity to any situation, but I would appreciate sticking to the subject matter at hand. Thank you very much for calling.
Okay, bye.
632-6901. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Yeah, I think Bush is an idiot. I really do. I mean, he's...
That's slanderous talk there, fella.
Oh, well...
That can land you in a lot of trouble, speaking out against the leader like that.
Actually, it can in Beijing, anyway.
Uh-huh.
He sits up there in his main home and talks about how he doesn't support the use of force against peaceful demonstrators. Of course, that's in Beijing, where it's communist. See, what about the right-wing dictators, which he supports, which the United States has supported throughout its history?
Uh-huh.
I mean...
Well, what do you think Bush is going to do next?
I think Bush is going to do very little, to tell the truth.
Why? I mean, this is a communist nation that is suppressing its citizens. Isn't that the kind of thing he loves to act against?
It is, but I really don't think that he's going to take... He'll use it to his advantage, and he'll release all these nice little things, these nice little sound bites saying how much he deplores this use of violent force, but I really don't think he'll take any action, politically, economically, or such. And
is it just because he's a wimp, or because he doesn't have any feelings on the matter?
It's because I don't think it's that important to him, to tell the truth.
It's the single most populous nation in the world. I think it's pretty important.
It is pretty important. But, I mean, our president has more important things to deal with, like big business and such. You know, I don't know. It's just, I think that he's quite a hypocrite.
Well, okay, let's forget about Bush.
Okay.
What should the leading party, what should the leaders in China do now? What's, you know... The
leaders in China do now? You want my true opinion? I think they should hang themselves. But,
Well, that's, I don't know if you heard the BBC before, but what one of the Chinese journalists was saying, he said that the person who ordered this should be shot.
Yeah, well, see, the whole thing is I think that, worldwide, international response should be some sort of, I don't know, some sort of political and or economical, action against at least the Chinese government.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but I don't see the problem is I don't know how you can do that without affecting the Chinese people.
Well, that's the old South African boycott thing too. You know, if you believe a boycott works there, then a boycott should work any place, right?
After I heard this, I went at 11 and watched the news, and they had pictures and all that stuff. And CBS has a reporter now who they haven't heard anything from. They had the last transmission that they heard from him, and you could hear them taking away the whatever he was speaking into.
He was speaking on a cellular phone. Did you hear the touch tones as they were taking it away?
Yeah, I heard that.
Pretty interesting.
Were they beating him?
We don't know because we haven't heard from him since they took him away and hung up his phone.
This has some sort of personal thing for me because my cousin was. Or is over in Beijing working for CNN.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I don't know what's happened to her.
Fascinating. Maybe we could give her a call.
Yeah. Call CNN and ask for a...
Well, I mean, you don't know the number of CNN over there, do you?
No.
Well, I'll tell you what.
She's not a direct cousin. She's two times...
But that doesn't matter. if you can find the number for CNN, we'll certainly try to get through and see, you know, if we can get a first-hand report from somebody.
But, I don't know, it just... and you were saying it can't happen in America. What about Kent State?
Exactly. That's what went through my mind completely. I mean, certainly nothing on this scale, but it was the same basic thing. Yes, the government sent out the heavy artillery against... I mean, what were the people at Kent State doing? Were they overthrowing the government? Were they hurting people? They were making a statement, same as these people.
I know, and it's... I mean, you know, you can hardly compare it. I mean, because that's a bunch of college students... In, you know, mid-America where four were shot, while this is overseas. And in fact, on one of the television stations, they were saying 175 at 11 o'clock, so...
Yeah, well, the reports are all crazy right now. I mean, you know, some of the copy rolling off the AP still is under 100, but the most updated reports are saying over 500 people were killed.
They had a Koch saying how each person that died, because this was, the couch was taped during the day, and he was saying, oh, well, we hope the casualties are few and the deaths even fewer, but he was saying for every person that dies there is an international martyr. And to a certain extent, I think that is true. I think that by shooting the students, they've just martyrized them in the worldview. And I mean, it's just something they can't erase. You know, by shooting 500 students, they can't erase the fact that it happened, and the fact that that shows that there is unrest. And who knows, there may be change. There probably will be.
I mean, it's an outrage. It should be reacted upon. It's illegal in any moral sense to execute your citizens like that.
Was it Sunday over there when that happened?
This happened after midnight today, so it happened after midnight on June 3rd. They're 13 hours ahead of us, so you figure it out. That's when it started to happen.
Well, it's Sunday. It's just sort of ironic.
Well, now it's Sunday, yes.
Well,
this happened on Saturday.
Well, it's just sort of, they were saying on television that it was Sunday over there, but it's sort of ironic how it should happen on Sunday. That all big revolutions happen on Sunday.
Actually, maybe you're right. Maybe it did start happening on Sunday morning. I'm not quite clear on that myself. But whatever, it's a sad situation, and it doesn't look like it's going to get any better in the near future.
Well,
any last thoughts? Like, what are the reactions of people in this country that you've seen so far?
I haven't seen any. I mean, I've just been in my house, or I was working, and then I came home, and to tell you the truth, I don't think the common person is going to really give a damn.
Uh-huh. Then who are all the news people talking to? You know, I see, you know, ABC and CBS interrupting their programs and these updates.
You know who they're talking to? They're talking to people who want to be entertained. They're talking to the same group that had Vietnam in their living rooms, and the same group that's been desensitized to this whole thing. And, you know, to American minds, it's just 500 Chinese dead. Who cares? You know, when's my next paycheck?
Uh-huh.
I really don't think that, on the whole, I mean, sure, you're going to have outbursts on college campuses and, you know, among intellectual circles and stuff like that. But even that is just talk, and no one takes action. And the common man, the common American, really doesn't care, I don't think. If it doesn't affect him.
That's the greatest condemnation I think you could have given to the American people. They don't care. I hope it's not true.
So do I, but I won't.
Okay, well, thanks very much for calling, and if you learn of something, please let us know.
No problem.
And we'll do the same here. 632-6901. That's our telephone number. And we talked about President Bush before and his sound bites. Let's see if President Bush has any sound bites. We have a special number that we call. We used to call President Reagan on this all the time. I haven't yet heard President Bush on it because it's always busy. So hopefully it's not busy now. Is that a busy signal? I believe it is. Okay, it's busy, so we won't hear President Bush saying anything about this tonight. But we might be able to do something even more exciting, as I do have a telephone number here for Radio Beijing in Beijing itself. Let's see if it's, in fact, even possible to make a call to China at this point. And if we do make a call to China, whether it's possible to speak to somebody in English, and whether it's possible for them to say anything to us, even if they can speak English. Uh-oh.
Your call cannot be completed at this time in the country you are calling. Please try your call later.
Well, I guess we can't be surprised by that.
Your call...
I would like to try it just a couple of more times, though, because sometimes... it goes through, but most of the time it doesn't. You can imagine quite a few people are trying to call over there. I had no trouble at all calling into China when martial law was first declared 2 weeks ago. Went right through, no problem. So one can always hope that we'll get a circuit. It's 16 minutes to 12 o'clock. Okay, let's give it one more try, and then we will officially give up on that. Incidentally, we receive tapes from Radio Beijing on a fairly regular basis. We were hoping to bring you their reports on the democracy movement. However, over the last couple of weeks, our supply has stopped, which is, I guess, kind of an ominous sign. Do we have a line? We have something. Okay. Hello, anyone there? Sound like somebody picked up. Well, that is the sound of a line to China. I don't know if it's what we wanted. If you want to call in with your comments, reflections, thoughts, while we still have some time, the number is 632-6901. We do have some open lines, and we would like to hear what the folks in Long Island and Connecticut have to say about these far-reaching circumstances. When you think of it, this is indeed a most dramatic day, based on the implications of what has happened. Oh my goodness! Oh my goodness! We have a news bulletin, and this is, let's get rid of the line from China. This is indeed an amazing news bulletin, folks. I don't know how to say this. This is nothing to do with China, but this is probably the most dramatic news bulletin I've ever had to read, and I'm not kidding. Tehran Radio reports that Iran's spiritual leader Ayatollah Khomeini has died. The report, monitored in Cyprus, gives no other details. Again, repeating, Ayatollah Khomeini has died. If you recall, reports have been filtering in over the last couple of days saying that his condition had worsened. In fact, I remember seeing a picture just this last week of Khomeini in the operating room. He had been operated upon for something, and Iranian TV surprised everybody by actually showing part of the operation on television. I could never understand why they, of all people, would do that. You would think a religious leader would, like the Ayatollah, would be far removed from having an operation of his covered on TV, but that wasn't the case. Interesting, too, because I was just listening to the BBC tonight, and they said they have no idea who would succeed the Ayatollah if he were to die tomorrow. And guess what? Again, repeating that, Iran's spiritual leader, Ayatollah Khomeini, has died. And that's the latest from our news bureau here. Let's give one more try to China, and then we'll go back to the phones. 632-6901, area code 516. And I'm sure a lot of Americans will be celebrating that news, but let's try not to do that over the radio. That's a whole other kettle of fish, Iran. Oh, boy. Okay, sounds like we've got the same thing there.
Your call can...
Okay, I believe what we got the first time was we just didn't get the recording or something because it made the same kind of a noise and it just never connected to anything. This is, I promise, the last time we're going to try this. 632-6901. We're going to go back to the calls in just a moment. Attempting to make a call to China, and we have failed.
Your call cannot be completed at this time in the country you are calling.
632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage. Hello?
Freddie might be listening.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, man, we have to talk about China still?
Well, what else did you want to talk about?
I think that the Ayatollah Khomeini dying, like, good for him.
Uh-huh.
After they burnt our flags, I'd like to make a dummy of him and drag it down the main street tomorrow.
Well, if you do that, make sure you call the newspapers beforehand so you can get coverage for it. Thanks for calling. Again, folks, I know, you know, the guy died and everything like that, but, I just don't think we should be celebrating anybody dying. It just doesn't seem right somehow. So let's try to keep that to a minimum. I mean, I wasn't any friend of the Ayatollah, believe me, but that's something else that is going to be earth-shattering in another part of the world. I mean, we have two countries here that are facing civil war because of events that have just happened. Let's try to keep it to China. If you have something to say about Ayatollah, too, that's okay. 632-6901, good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
So, my name's Dave, and I just want to talk about the incident over in China.
Go right ahead.
It surprised me about hearing 500 people dying. I mean, how could an army do that? It's just a simple protest.
Yeah, against its own people, you know, that's the amazing part.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, they want to live like a better life, because communism isn't, well, to us, isn't the greatest. Well.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it is misunderstood, too, but there are elements of it that that go against what we stand for, yes.
Well, also, that since China probably wouldn't do such a great job under democracy anyway, because if you look back in 1920, after Germany was conquered, they turned to democratic, and it just fell apart.
Uh-huh. Well, couldn't you have said the same thing about Japan?
Well,
Japan is a fairly democratic society now, and they seem to be prospering quite well.
Yeah, but I don't think they were communists for very long. I mean, China's been communist ever since communism has been spreading, but at least we don't have to worry about the spread of communism anymore.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, everything changes. That's, you know, nothing is permanent. And we are constantly learning, and I think this is all part of a learning experience. What's happening in the Soviet Union, what's happening in China.
Well, in Soviet Union, everything, it seems to be life improving there. They got a glasnost, which is openness, and, I mean, people could leave the country.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. People should be able to do that.
Yeah, they shouldn't be caught now, trapped in their own country.
Uh-huh.
They want to travel.
Uh-huh. What do you attribute to the changes that are taking place in both the Soviet Union and China? Why now? Why is it happening now?
Well, make more work for future students, I don't know. but more likely, probably because in China, the Chinese are learning how we live and how life is great in the United States, and they want to have some freedom. And in Soviet Union, it's almost the same thing, except it's like lightening up over there ever since Gorbachev took over.
Well, you know, there's a basic difference between the Soviet Union and, well, there's two basic differences. First of all, in China, the changes are coming from the people, whereas in the Soviet Union, the changes are coming from the top leader. Gorbachev is spreading his changes, and they're sort of catching on with the people. In China, they tried to make it work the other way, and obviously it hasn't worked so far. And also, there's an inherent difference in the whole situation. In China, of course, the people tend to be homogenous, whereas in the Soviet Union, there's many, many different ethnic groups, and that's why you can't really compare the two, even though what's happening is rather similar.
Yeah, also, well, Russia is such a large country. I mean, how could Moscow, which is in the western part, keep control over the eastern part?
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's just humongous.
Right, and especially when it's a completely different kind of people that live in that part. You know, I mean, I don't know if you've ever been to Siberia. I know I haven't, but the people who live in Siberia, unless they've been sent there, are completely different from the people that live in the western part. different customs.
They don't really care about what's going on in Moscow. They don't have to worry about being arrested for saying certain things.
Uh-huh. Well, they might still have to worry about that, but I know that they resent being dictated to from a distant city.
Moscow is about maybe 4,000 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
Why should they be governed by something that far away? They mm-hmm. should have their own form of government. That's the way they think, at least.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks very much for calling, sir.
Thanks a lot.
632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Yes, hello. I would like to talk to you about China. You know, the Americans, they look at the world in a funny way. I don't know why you think that the Soviet Union and China gaining a democracy would be so good for the world. Don't you understand that this country is a powerful country? It is because of the system of government and productivity, and consequently they are powerful, and they use up so much of the world's goods that it is dangerous. When these unorganized nations finally achieve the power of democracy, of parliament, of organization, intelligence, and productivity, not only will they be more destructive to the environment, 1.5 billion strong, but they will be more competitive in the marketplace. Their monthly salary is ridiculously low. It is like $1, $2, $3, $4. They work. These people are trained, disciplined in their minds to work very hard. Napoleon said many years ago, let China sleep, for when it does wake up, be very careful. I tell you now, this is not such a good day, although I am happy for the people, but when they do wake up, I can say they will be a very, very potent force.
Well, I see what you're saying, with 1.5 billion people, that if 1.5 billion people suddenly started living the way Americans lived, yes, that could destroy the entire planet in a matter of hours. But I think the issue here is the individual, and what the individual person, what kind of life they are leading right now. Obviously, they're not satisfied. And when you ask the average Chinese if they are happy with their present system of government, they don't seem to be. So they have to come to terms with that. They have to change it. And I don't think we should interfere, but I don't think democracy is so much what is harmful to the entire planet as a whole. I think it's capitalism and competitiveness and, you know, all this every man for himself type of ideal. But I don't think the democratic ideals are what are at fault. I think that's something that can lead to the betterment of mankind.
It certainly can, and it certainly leads to the betterment of the individual. But there is sometimes more involved on a more introspective view. We live in a brand new world. It is not the same world you knew last year or the year before that. Certainly not as we knew it 10 years ago. This world today is a new world, a brand new world. World market, world information, world sharing, world marketplace. It's also a new world in nuclear proliferation. Iraqi working on the bomb. China has the bomb. Soviet Union has the bomb. England has the bomb. Israel has the bomb. They share it with South Africa. The Indians have the bomb. Pakistan is working on the bomb. Brazil is working on the bomb. Uruguay has the bomb. Okay? This is a new world. The information is replete. The information is everywhere. When these nations mature, they will be... You see, today, America is respected for its country, its democracy, its understanding, its reasonableness, its group of men, 300 men who decide one decision. This is fairness. But these countries, when they finally climb, they're climbing up there where we were in 1910, 1905. They're where we were then. When they climb out and wake up, we have got to find a new way of living, which we have not done yet.
But I don't think the rest of the world should be waiting. I mean, well, in 1910, there wasn't a country like us around above us, you see. So I don't know if that's really a fair comparison.
It's not so much my thoughts are this. This, you know, in private, I was told that capitalistic leaders, they really truly don't really urge other nations to become capitalistic and strong and competitive. We have pollution problems now beyond belief. The atmosphere is quenched with fumes. The amount of product going into society, into the air, and into the world is very strong. We have 900% more televisions, radios, TVs, not to talk of clothing, don't even talk of automobiles, don't talk of utensils. We have so much more of these things. When the rest of the world wants to share in this, we all must be there to pay the price.
Well, maybe the rest of the world doesn't want to do it quite to the extent that we're doing it. Maybe we're the ones that should be changing our habits a little bit.
Well, let me just say that for those of you who herald Chinese people becoming organized, which is happening today, and it is a great day. It's a very important day, more important than any strategic point this country has ever had in its history, including its revolution. It's a very, very, very important day. They are climbing out of centuries and centuries of disorganization. And they are an intelligent people. When there is a survey taken, who are the most intelligent people? First comes women above men. I don't know if most men will not like to hear that. But beyond that, again, Oriental is more intelligent than the Caucasian. This is just taken on survey. These people are disciplined, organized individuals. When they finally come to the organization as to what will put their society and their country and their world at fault and in moving, it is going to be a different day. So many people, and you know the soldiers. They don't want to. This is a very restrained force. This truly is a restrained force in China.
Well, not anymore. It's not. Not after today. It's not.
For a Chinese soldier to shoot another Chinese person is a grave consequence. I don't think that will escalate. And I want you to hold me to that. I will call you back.
Okay.
You will see that will not happen. But this is a great day for the Chinese. But may I just say, it is a very different day for the rest of the world. I will hang up now, and I thank you for the wonderful program.
Okay, thanks for calling. I think, you know, obviously it's a very sad occasion for all of us, what has happened in China today. And we will certainly be watching the situation to see what happens in the next few weeks, next few days. Probably things are happening right now that we haven't had a chance to report yet. Let's recap through the BBC, and then we will say goodbye, say hello to Brother Nick. Again, the BBC here on WUSB, Stony Brook.
And to end the news, here are the latest details of the situation in Peking. Chinese troops and tanks have stormed Peking's Tiananmen Square and taken control from the pro-democracy demonstrators who have been encamped there for the last few weeks. Many people have been killed and hundreds wounded. Some were shot, some crushed by tanks. It was in the early hours of the morning that soldiers in armored personnel carriers broke through barricades on the outskirts of the square. Correspondents have been visiting hospitals in the city, trying to cope with the casualties. After the violence, the students have been calling on the people of Peking to go on strike in protest at the army's action. During the assault, many people in the streets said they could not believe that they'd been fired on and pleaded with foreign reporters to tell the world that troops of the People's Liberation Army were shooting Chinese citizens. The soldiers are said to be from the 27th Army, loyal to the hardline President Yang Shangkun. Latest reports say the situation has now quietened down. I'm Chris Chaplin. You've been listening to Newsdesk.
And you've been listening to Brain Damage here on WUSB in Stony Brook. Thanks to everybody that called up. And keep your eye on the newspapers, listen to the radio, listen to shortwave, and ask a lot of questions and talk to people, too. Because what's happening today around the world is, well, it's a dramatic type of a thing. Something that will be remembered for centuries to come. It would be a shame to miss it. And again, the bulletin we read only a few minutes ago, Ayatollah Khomeini has died. The Iranian spiritual leader had been ill for some time. And we'll bring you more details as they come in, if they come in. So far, that's all we have. WUSB Stony Brook, Eric Corley with you on Brain Damage. We'll be back again next week. Stay tuned for Brother Nick and some lunacy, right? Yeah, okay. Lunacy, we got
someday.
It. Someday. Oh, Sunday morning here. Good night.
Remembering games, daisy chains and locks. Got to keep the lunacy on the path. The lunatic is in the hall. The lunatics are in my hall. The paper holds their folded faces to the floor. And every day the paper boy brings more. Thank you.
Hi, this is Mike Mills of REM, and you're listening to WUSB 90.1 Stony Brook, Long Island's first station of the 90s.